Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Wednesday, the 19th of March. It is a delight to have you with us. Monday was St. Patrick's Day. Today is St. Joseph's Day.
Oh, yeah?
I just want to point that out.
Patron saint of baby aspirin?
That's funny, Ray. And it should be pointed out, you know, you're Catholic, right?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, so...
You know, so I'm allowed.
You're allowed.
Yeah.
Good clarification, Al. Thank you. Let's talk about, first let me introduce the panel. WAMC's Ray Graff is here. Good morning, Raymond.
Good morning.
How are you?
Great. And, thank you for asking.
Well.
And how are you?
Trusted the service.
I'm good.
Good. Very excellent. Good. Nice to have you here, Joe.
And also, Alan Chartek is here, WAMC's very own, and it's a delight. Rosemary is on vacation this week. People have asked if she's on some mission.
Yeah.
People always think we fired her. We love her.
Yeah. She'll fire us.
Maybe. Yeah. That's maybe, because she can't stop. You know, she does that. She's working on a series of very interesting stories.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's all of that going on. And interesting stuff. Also, we look at the... Ian Pickus will be joining us a little bit later because you Albany had quite a night last night.
Yeah,
and we'll talk about the ups and downs of that as a part of the NCAA championship, and it was an exciting time. And,
yeah, wait till they beat the Gators.
Yes,
then they'll really be on the map.
Well, number one, it'll be really cool. So we'll talk about that a little bit later on. Let us. Start off with the crisis in Ukraine, and put this into check for me, Alan. Because I look at the paper. I was reading the New York Times in depth last night, and I know we've discussed this pretty much every day for the last month, various aspects of it, but I find this now to be, and maybe I'm just late to the party here, but this seems really scary. Like, aren't we reaching a point where it seems potentially very, very frightening?
Yeah, it does. Because I wasn't paying attention, we're talking about the airline?
No. We're talking about
Ukraine and Crimea.
I was doing something else.
No, the situation in Russia.
It's very scary.
You talk about crisis in Ukraine, and again, I mean, this was the banner on the Times, and I was reading all of the stories, and with what happened yesterday, and Putin reclaiming Crimea for Russia, and denouncing the West, and this seems like
it's scary.
Yeah.
I missed my opportunity, and I apologize to everybody for that. It is very. I always go back to Mario Cuomo's admonition, which was there are good politicians and bad politicians. The good ones, he said, can think six moves ahead. If they do this, then we do this. But if we do this, then they'll do that. Now, yesterday, Putin said. When he was talking about the various things that we were putting on to them, that you better not. Gotcha. Mm. So you better not. So here's Obama in the White House. He's meeting with his people. They're saying, Mr. President, you have to appear to be strong here, stronger than you are. So you're going to put more sanctions on. You're going to say, instead of 25 people not being able to get onto the airplane, maybe 40 people. Putin is saying, you better not do that. Now, what does he mean by that? Does he mean, if you do that, it gives me an excuse, a la certain people around 1938, to take another country or to go somewhere else or to go into the rest of Ukraine? The answer to that is, what is the president's next move after that? And that, I think, Joe, is why you say it's getting scary. Because as Arlo Guthrie has said, those guys have bombs. He said it in a different context, but those people have bombs over there. Things can get out of hand. Now, on the other hand, can you succumb to a bully? In other words, if this guy is now saying to us, you better not, and then puts 80,000 troops or whatever he's got on the Ukraine border, on the border, and says, you better not. And if you do, that's my excuse to go in there. What do you do then?
I remember as a kid, this is early 1980s. This is pre-Gorbachev. This is Brezhnev Russia and Ronald Reagan. And there is, and there is, and I had a brother in the Marine Corps, and I remember like being frightened of what could happen, and I really haven't felt that way. I mean, obviously, with the wars that we've been in and the terrorists and sort of that certainly. But as far as Russia and as far as this situation, it seems very troubling and seems to be getting worse.
Well, Putin is getting high, I think, on the feedback from the Russian people, which is very good, very strong. His numbers are going up. People like it. He gets a rush. Now, in the North Korean situation, you know, who knows what that madman would do? These people are really nutty, and you don't know how far they will go. We've always assumed that Putin, you know, was a moderate man to some degree who knew how far to go and how far not to go. But if, in fact, he decides that we're all a bunch of chickens and he can do whatever he wants and that the Russian people are going to applaud him, you got to put yourself into his place and think what he is going to do. Now, what are we going to do? Send troops in? I don't think so. Send a bomb his way? I don't think so. What are we going to do? When we did Vox Pop the other afternoon, everybody called in and said, we should be stronger. I say, and what would you do?
Not everyone said that, though. There were some who said, hey, listen, crime, and I listened to the show yesterday, your Vox Pop show on that, and, you know, a lot of people, not a lot, but a percentage said, hey, Crimea is really part of Russia.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's right. Okay, now what do those same people say when it's all of Ukraine? I see you smiling. Do they say, because I like to say that just so everybody out there knows what Ray's reaction is.
That I'm allowed to smile?
No, that you're
well,
smiling
well,
no, for a reason.
Well, people don't associate it's you not, with smiling. So we want to.
It's nonverbal.
Right.
See, and nonverbal communication, as we professors know, is very important.
Okay, fine. Okay.
Especially on the radio.
Yeah, so therefore, what if he takes Ukraine now? And the same people call up, and they will, they might, and say, you know, Ukraine has always been in the Russian sphere of influence. Who do we think we are? What if they took, what if we moved into something
okay.
else again?
Well, in the New York Times article on this that we've been citing here, Putin reclaims Crimea for Russia and bitterly denounces the West. This was, I think it might have been in today's or late yesterday. Mm-hmm. Here's Putin addressing the people. Millions of Russians went to bed in one country and woke up abroad, he said. Overnight, they were minorities in the former Soviet republics, and the Russian people became one of the biggest, if not the biggest, divided nations in the world. He cited the 10th century baptism of Prince Vladimir, whose conversion to Orthodox Christianity transformed the kingdom then known as Rus into the foundation of the empire that became Russia. He called Kiev the mother of Russian cities, making clear he considered Ukraine, along with Belarus, to be countries where Russia's own interest would remain at stake regardless of the fallout. So is this foreshadowing?
No, that's the threat.
Yeah.
What he's doing.
Is it a threat or
says,
is it
I'm not threatening anybody.
Telegraphing what he's going
to
do.
He moves all those troops up to the Ukraine border. Okay, that's not a threat, you see. Or he says something like you've just read and says that of course is a threat. Say, you people go ahead, but remember, if you do, that gives me free rein. And then what are you going to do?
You said something earlier that the word, what you said, you know, we don't want to be perceived as chicken, you know,
the Obama people.
Yeah, that we're chicken on this. But again, bringing up that point of, okay, but then what do you do? That's a very delicate balance.
By the way, my answer to that is damned if I know. And
right.
A guy called yesterday and I said, what do you do? And we went through what we've just done. And he said, that's why I don't want to be president. That's why I don't want to be president. Because this is tough stuff. I mean, if you're going to play chicken, Kennedy played chicken. You know, in the nuclear thing, there are all kinds of secret negotiations going on that we didn't know about at the time, but he got a tremendous amount of credit. Is this a similar situation to what Kennedy faced in Cuba? I don't think so.
I don't think it's analogous because Cuba was much closer to home for us.
90 miles.
Yeah. And this is,
Buffalo.
For all intents and purposes, very far away and already under the Russian sphere. So I don't think those two situations, in other words, I don't think we'll be pointing any extra missiles at them over this.
Well, if somebody wants to write us at roundtable at WAMC.org.
They're allowed.
They could.
Paragraph or less, please.
And they can tell us what we should do. Because that's the interesting question. Move three, what do you do? Right. He takes Ukraine, what do you do?
And
punt.
Well, right. How much, like, what is a winning situation there?
Do we have to win the situation?
No.
Rand Paul brought that up yesterday.
The winning situation, to me...
Well,
is
peace
is a
winning situation. Some degree of stability is a winning
economic
situation.
Economic prosperity is a winning situation, and both sides have an interest in that. So, theoretically, the brinksmanship will eventually come down to the economics of the whole thing.
To me, well, yes. And what you have there, interestingly, is the Russian malaise... economic malaise on one hand, and the Russian beating of chest saying this.
I hope you're watching that on the video.
Yeah,
by the
that
way.
Was a great,
pretty impressive.
You know,
an outtake from Lance Link's Secret Chimp there for a moment.
Nice reference, right?
Yeah,
nice
thanks.
Reference.
Yeah. Thanks very much.
Look who's talking. So,
ouch.
So the real to me. Winning in this situation, Joe and Ray, is if you keep... They got Crimea, they keep Crimea. The question is, how do you stop them from going to the next step using some action that we take as a pretext for doing that? And the answer is, I don't know. What are we willing to do? They've got nuclear bombs.
I don't know if you recall a week or two ago, we mentioned an article. Maybe you were here. Henry Kissinger had written it a week, maybe 10 days ago. And his point was more or less that, you know, Ukraine should not be in NATO and should be under the Russian sphere of influence. And, you know, the West, to some extent, is extending too far. And what would Russia do? I mean, I'm paraphrasing Henry Kissinger.
Sure.
There.
And he's one of the greatest thinkers of international relations in the world. And he and I agree on that, although
okay.
I don't always agree with him, like when he prayed on the White House floor with Nixon.
What was wrong with that?
I just thought it was a little over the top.
We're going to go. I probably want to take a break, so I'll just leave early so we can do both of the breaks in that one before the news.
Dave Hopper is noncommittal.
Yes.
Whatever you want to do is fine.
Okay, that's right.
And then you and I get down on the floor here and pray.
Fine.
All right. As you do most.
That's what we do when the employee reviews come around anyway.
So, so in the 2 minutes we have left, Alan, my question is, a great deal has been made in commentaries. I've been reading a lot, especially in the Washington Post, which by the way has more editorials than you really need, I think. But anyway, they've been going over and over again about this president and his foreign policy, and of course the right. The both Republicans and conservatives have been harping on this of the president.
Sure.
and his foreign policy.
I'm a big fan of the president's foreign policy. I am.
What is it?
Well, it is that you try to minimize your bellicosity. And that is exactly what he has done. Now, the American people can either react to being bellicose and say, that's good, President Prez,
so,
go get him. Or they can say, well, our kids aren't dying anymore. We're not sending people into places where they shouldn't be. And you've gotten them out of those places. And I think that is something that more people should be talking about.
I apologize for using this term game because I realize there's lives at stake. But you start the game by saying, and let's change that word and say the process. So you start the process and say, okay, here are sanctions. Here are the first level of sanctions. And you almost have to do that, right? You can't just go in and say, we're going to do something more tremendous. You have to do it in steps.
You put your finger right on it because now Putin says, okay, you told 25 of my top billionaires that they can't fly on your airplanes, and I'll take Ukraine. How do you deal with that?
Yeah.
The minute you are forced by your politics to do it, then what do? When he seizes upon that and says, okay, there's my excuse for taking the next country.
We're going to take a break and we'll move on to other issues of the day. We'll get caught up on our underwriting from the break that we missed all of that good stuff. We're okay. We'll be back. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'd love to hear from you on this. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Welcome back to the roundtable panel. A delight to have you with us. Ray Graff, Alan Chartok, myself, Joe Donahue, and Ian Pickles will be joining us a little later to talk about some UAlbany news and the excitement in the sports world. I do have to say, you know, people write to us. We've been getting a couple letters a day, and I just want to address this because I think it's interesting. People will write and say, I love the music going in and out of the segments, or I hate the music.
Yeah, bumper music.
Music, right. Yeah. And and what we try to say to people is that it's eclectic. It's a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Who picks it?
Dave Hopper is our is our band leader. So he picks it, and it fits the moment and the time.
Or not, but I mean it's always an interesting
selection. But it's always something different.
Friday we had the Smiths. I mean, how
which
can you
was
lose,
great,
right?
And we got great letters on that. And sometimes people write, and I just want to say, you know, it's a little bit of something.
I like to hear the Weavers myself.
Right.
The other letter we got yesterday, I just want to address is a woman said you let it play on a little too long, and I said, you know, it's a live show. Sometimes we just have to communicate with one another
right before,
so that we know what we're going to do
setting
next.
Up. Yeah.
And I know it's hard for people to believe that we plan in any way, shape, or form.
No, we.
I mean,
we
there's
really,
certainly not much evidence.
We don't do much. No. You send us a note every night. I wake up because I got to bed at 7:30, and every night I wake up and read your planned topics. And then if we see something else,
suggested topics.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. We send it to you. Okay, should we read some of the mail?
We got a lot now. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, here we go. Joe Ray and Dr. Allen, firstly, thank you so much for the show and lively discussion. It does promote some actual thinking, believe it or not. We would do well to remember that the current Ukraine government is an illegitimate one installed by a violent coup fomented and, quote, helped by the U.S. State Department. Elections were and are due to in May, wherein Viktor Yanukovych was certain to lose. These elections were subverted by outside meddling in order to install those in our government thought would be malleable to our particular interests and the predations of the IMF. With that in mind, the embarrassment and hypocrisy should dictate a strictly hands-off policy and stop the belligerent posturing and mouthings about freedom and self-determination. We've heard this old horse hockey enough times to know what it is. Those of us who have been paying attention, that is, and thanks from Pete from Toland. Okay.
And bonus points for using horse
hockey.
Well done. Yeah.
That's good. And then, of course, there is so there's Jeremy. I don't know what I'm talking about, but the premise that y'all keep repeating seems ridiculous to the surface. We, US, UK, slapped the wrist of a bunch of Russian billionaires, and Putin uses this as a pretext for attacking Ukraine? Seems like a petulant sophomoric posture.
I think that's a ridiculous leap, too. I mean, why? If he's going to do it, he can do it. He doesn't need to blame these sanctions on 12 people.
Well, he needs something. He does something.
Does he?
Well, that's what he thinks. Okay, but don't we just involve ourselves in whatever world affairs we want to? Why should we be surprised other countries do the same? Jeremy and Kerhonson,
all right, Jeremy,
love you guys, he said. Okay.
Whoa.
Love you guys.
All
okay.
Right.
That's Jeremy. And then, okay, Joe, Ray, and Dr.
Oh, you did that one.
I'm so sorry.
Read that again.
How about?
I like that beginning a lot, so I read it twice.
No, that's fine. How about from Ted?
Ted, here we go. Okay, what is the shoe? What is?
What if
the shoe is on the other foot? I.e., if Canada was aligning with Russia, how aggressive would the U.S. be? Anybody want to answer that question? I think it's quite
clear. I think we know the answer,
clear.
Right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Matthew?
Matthew, thank you. The question for me is not what we should do regarding the Ukraine. That seems to be the cart before the horse thing. The question is what can we do? Matthew from Cummington. Right. Well,
yes.
That's what I've been saying. What can we do? And Scott says secede. What does that mean?
Well, I don't know. It's a sort of a
general...
Oh,
wait a second. We should reinforce our NATO allies, of which Ukraine is not, but we absolutely have no other business over there. We should not be running the world. The people of that nation have the right of self-determination. They overwhelmingly voted to secede. Let's hope it ends there. Well, hope is eternal. Okay. Now, and Daisy. Daisy says, I'm just reminding you of the scary interview on NPR yesterday. Russian representatives stated reasons why Russia would be justified to expand its powers. Keep referring to neo-Nazis, and if Ukraine, the non-Russian part of Ukraine, decided to join the EU, what do we do? And I don't think it stops with Ukraine. Putin and his cronies are furious about the collapse of the larger Soviet Union. We'll use any excuse to expand.
And then all the way on the top, we got one just in from BJ.
From
Beach.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Beach. I see. Love roundtable. The Ukraine's rebelled, kicked out bad leaders of their country. We apply first level of sanctions. U.S. the best horse in the glue factory. Tell Putin to do what he has to do, and we can impose stronger sanctions. We want to avoid dead and killing. BJ.
In right, there you go. And finally, Jeremy writes, your bumper music is great. Love it, especially when it runs long. And I do know what I'm talking about. I'm a music producer.
Well, you see, there
oh,
you
boy.
Go.
Oh,
yeah,
boy.
So.
Oh, boy.
We were.
Does it get any better than that?
No, that was a good run. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's move on to, we did get one other letter, and I'll just use it as a
sure.
jumping
of course.
Spot yeah. into
oh,
the
like
next
this.
Story.
Of course.
This is from the story of, so pilots. Home simulator files deleted. How many pilots have one of these at their house? Question mark. I'm sticking to my abandoned airstrip in South Pacific theory. If planning to an attack, they have to leave from a spot to reach target without refueling. Check that map. And this is from Adrian in New Paltz. This comes from the story, of course, that as we continue to talk about the Malaysian jetliner and the mystery deepens. And so what we have right now is questions about both the radar and questions about the files that were deleted on the lead pilot's flight simulator. And so as far as the radar, if the missing Malaysia Airlines jetliner flew north over the Asian mainland after it lost contact with ground controllers on March 8th, it would have a difficult time avoiding detection by Chinese, Indian, or American radar, according to military officials.
So last night, I have a long talk with Denny Farrell. You all know who he is. Herman
yes.
Denny Farrell. He's the number two guy in the assembly. He's the chair of the Ways and Means Committee. A great guy. Tall guy. I don't like that part.
No?
No, he's too tall. Anyway, but anyway, he's a great guy, and we have this long talk, and he loves the roundtable, listens all the time, and says, September 9th, and then he referred me to an article. He said, Google it, and here it is. September 1970, as part of the Dawson Field hijackings, PFLP members attempted to hijack four aircraft simultaneously. They succeeded on three and forced the planes to fly to the Jordanian desert, where the hijackers blew up the aircraft after releasing most of the hostages. The final hostages were freed in exchange for seven Palestinian prisoners. The fourth attack on an El Al plane by two people, including Leila Khalid, was foiled by the pilots, passengers, and armed guards aboard. So and he's saying, I believe, said Denny, I believe there's a possibility that those passengers are alive.
Well, what Adrian's email kind of alluded to, which is in this article from the New York Times, is that perhaps a better direction to look is the southern route. In other words, there are two arcs. One takes you over a part of China into Afghanistan and that way. And what military people, including the military people in China, say is, you fly over here, we will know about it.
Yeah.
And a 777 has a big signature.
Right.
So perhaps it is better to search that southern route and find out if somebody tried to land this thing, see if there's a spot to land it there.
Yeah.
I believe it was the BBC this morning, very early this morning, that said that the search area is just slightly larger than the United States.
Yeah.
I mean, that
I heard
that's
a
insane.
Million miles or something like that.
Incredible.
Yeah. So, you know, everybody said, well, you're going in the wrong place. You're looking in the wrong place. Of course they're going to say that. But, you know, I mean,
it's not the right place until you find it.
That's profound. That is right.
Yeah, well, thank you.
No, you're right.
Let's go to one
puzzled,
other.
Right?
No.
Are you puzzled?
No. Just drinking in the profundity of it all.
What's the key word there?
Drinking. Am I right?
Yeah.
Okay. Just checking. Ray sent over an interesting story yesterday that was from the Washington Post. The National Security Agency, NSA to its friends, has built a surveillance system capable of recording 100% of a foreign country's telephone calls. 100% is all of them.
Yeah.
Enabling the agency to rewind and review conversations as long as a month after they take place, according to people with direct knowledge of the effort and documents supplied by former contractor Edward Snowden. A senior manager from the program compares it to a time machine, one that can replay the voices from any call without requiring that a person be identified in advance for surveillance.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I used to work for this congressman many years ago as an intern, and he used to start every conversation saying something rude, very rude, to J. Edgar Hoover, assuming that he was never on the telephone alone.
Yeah.
And I think with what we got now, one can assume that.
So they actually did this, at least according to to this article. And at the request of U.S. officials, the Washington Post is withholding details that could be used to identify the country. So it would seem to be that there is some confirmation that, in fact, they did
it in one country.
In one country.
But I'll bet it's in more than one country.
But that's amazing. All the calls sucked in by this giant, what they call, you know, the retro tool as part of this Mystic program.
And then they have to have something that will separate the wheat from the chaff. In other words, they've got to know what they're looking for. But they can do that.
But the interesting thing is, it's very much like a voicemail system here, where the oldest messages get blown out as the time goes
on. After 30 days.
And the new ones come
in.
After
30 days.
So they have 30 days to go back and search what they need to search.
And if you believe that one, I got a bridge for sale. In other words, maybe they can download.
Well, I think they can hold on to what they want to.
Yeah.
I mean, the way I read this, I think that's a good point. The call buffer opens the door, quote, into the past, the summary says, enabling users to retrieve audio of interest that was not tasked at the time of the original call. Analysts listen to only a fraction of 1% of the calls, but the absolute numbers are high. Each month they send millions of voice clippings or cuts for processing and here's the key, long-term storage. So basically you go through the process, you find the stuff that you want, and you hold on to that
sure.
for as long as you want
sure.
to.
Sure, or you do what we do now. You put one of those things in your machine, and it saves everything from a particular time, you know.
Like a flash drive?
Yeah,
or what do you mean?
A big flash drive, so that you can save.
You put one of those things in your machine?
The last 30 days.
Yeah.
Right, one of those things, as Joe says.
I'm with you. At least I'm. That's for the record, I'm with you.
Okay, but I'm just thinking about this. Let's just say we decided to record every call in Ukraine.
Okay.
Which would not surprise me. And we decided to do that. And who is going to translate all of that? Now, are there more Russian speakers? Do we have more Russian translators, or do they have more English people, you know, in Russia who can do us?
Well, and I think a lot of it's being done electronically. I think a lot of it's being done. A lot of it is being done through the computer programs that allow it to be translated automatically into transcripts.
Yeah.
Which and then is looking for keywords and is keeping that information.
Hopefully, it's more accurate than the auto spell correct on my iPhone.
Well, absolutely, but also or the closed captioning on television when you're watching a live event.
Yeah.
Well, it's scary. Let me put it. You're getting back on to topic. I think it is scary. It is scary. We talk about civil liberties all the time. But now we know this technology is here, and if anybody assumes that they're on the phone alone with whoever they're talking to, forget it, Jack.
Alan, and you have to think about this too. I mean, 1% of every single solitary phone call?
How many is that?
That's a lot.
In a country.
That's a lot.
Sure.
That's a lot. We're going to take a break. We're going to end on a high note. We're going to bring in our basketball expert.
I pick.
Known as Ian Pickus, our news director, who will come in, a UAlbany alum, and very happy about the great job that they did as part of the NCAA championship last night.
He's optimistic.
Yeah, he's optimistic. He had a tough year. As you know, there was a Derek Jeter retired.
Yes.
No, he hasn't retired yet.
Well,
this
he's
is his final year. Yeah, final so, year. So announced his retirement.
This has really hurt Ian's feelings.
All right.
Yeah. So Ian will be in, and we welcome your letters as always, roundtable@wamc.org, and we will be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Adirondack Folk School, Lake Luzerne, New York. Dedicated to teaching the arts, crafts, and culture of the Adirondack region, adirondackfolkschool.org. And William Pitt Sotheby's International Realty, local Berkshire County agents working to join buyers and sellers around town, the region, and the world. WilliamPitt.com for listings.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, Joe Donahue, and now we welcome Ian Pickus, our news director, to the program. Dayton, Ohio, last night, the game began at 6:40 p.m. It was the University at Albany Great Danes against Mount St. Mary, and it was a game to advance and to play the top seed Florida. And Thursday, all part of the NCAA March Madness tournament. And Ian is here to talk about this because it was, I'll tell you, I listened to half of it on the radio. I watched half of it on television. Well, I couldn't get it on television.
How do you do all this stuff? I don't get it.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, Joe will tell you that he watched, you know, five shows on television. He'll tell you that he saw three movies.
He read
14 books, and he listened to the.
You do it all at one time.
Yes, a Bourne ultimatum room with all the screens.
Yeah, you do it all at one time. But no, I listened to it on the way home. I taught last night, so I was coming back. I listened to it on the radio. And then to halftime, and then when I got home, I realized that my particular cable provider did not have it on.
Really?
Yeah.
Not on True TV?
Well, I couldn't find True.
Just go through every channel, all 3,000. That's what I do, and I finally came up with it.
Well, anyway, I ended up watching it online, and it was great. So, and they won, and the game was interesting because it seemed in the first the 5 minutes, Mount St. Mary didn't score hardly at all. What, 2 points? And then it got scary.
Yeah, is Mount St. Mary's in a powerhouse basketball force?
I wouldn't say powerhouse, but they've been in the tournament a few times. They got in this year by doing much what UAlbany did, which was surprise everyone and win the Northeast Conference pretty much as a four seed out of nowhere. So they certainly belonged in the field, no doubt about that. I'm happy to report I've already smack-talked our Wednesday commentator, Dr. Keith Strudler from Marist, who did his graduate work at Florida.
Oh, boy.
So let the games begin.
Okay, so you think that now we talked about this earlier. Number one, let's go back to this being a tournament game. You consider this to be the game last night, a tournament game. There is some talk that, well, it's a play-in, and the tournament really starts on Thursday.
Hey, you know, they tell you where to show up and who to play, and you have to go out and win your games if you want to be alive, and they did. So I say put it on the banner. Let's count it. Let's move on, and now we get a shot.
Let's get right to it. Can we beat Albany beat Florida?
What do you mean we?
Well, I'm a professor emeritus.
That's okay. All right. Oh,
well, although I never liked the name Great Danes, I never understood that.
They used to be the pedagogues, the teachers' college peds back in the day. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I can see why they changed that one.
Unfortunate as well.
I think we.
I do think if they played Florida 100 times, they might lose 95 of those. But they only have to play once.
They could win 5 of them.
Yeah, I think so. I think first of all, in college basketball, the bottom. You know, the bottom number of teams have gotten better in the last few years, and the good teams have stayed good. The teams like Albany and like Mount St. Mary's are better than they've ever been.
Well, a couple of 3 years ago, UAlbany came within, 10 or 12 minutes of the upset of all time against UConn.
Sergeant Preston.
From what I have seen of the team this year, this team is not quite what that team was.
I would agree with that. I think this team is as tough as nails. It's 2 years in a row of getting into the tournament, which is hard to do in the America East Conference, with a nice mixture of grit and they're tough when the cards are on the table. The team in 06 was supremely talented. The best player in the history of the team, Jamar Wilson. But they were also a 16 seed, not given a lot of credit going in. And I happened to be at that game in Philadelphia. They led UConn 50-38.
It was pretty exciting.
With 11 minutes to go, and it would have been a historic win. So that has to be their attitude now facing Florida, which is the number one team in the whole entire tournament. But you know what? They're going to play the game. They're going to throw the basketball up, and that's why we play. It could happen.
You know, I was watching the game last night, and with like 3 minutes left, I think it was like 63-62, and you just freeze frame on that for a second. It doesn't, to me as a fan, it doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah,
it was
last 21-2 was a lot better.
Yeah, no, well, no,
if you're
UAlbany
person.
Yeah, if you're
UAlbany,
but I mean,
the girls. What about the women?
They're coming up over the weekend, I believe. They have.
Saturday.
South Carolina.
Saturday.
Is our girls' team better than our guys' team?
They've won three in a row. They're probably, in terms of the league that they play in, absolutely. Mm-hmm. The Albany Men were the fourth seed. They were one game over 500 going into the tournament. The women's team almost went undefeated in the league. So I think.
So could the women go all the way?
At this level, I think going all the way is to win one game. That has to be the goal for this level. I was talking to a fellow UAlbany, fan and alum, and we were saying basically, these play-in game on a Tuesday night, most people would poo-poo it, but it's kind of our national championship.
It's fun,
right? I mean, it's really.
But I wanted to know, you got the Nanotech Center that split off from University of Albany.
Yeah, they don't.
Does
have
anybody
a team.
Happen to know if they have a?
No, they don't have a team.
It's
no,
very small.
Well, they should have a team.
They have a chippy style play. I couldn't help myself.
That was a shot, by the way, in case anybody didn't
catch it.
Sunday, 3:00, the women play West Virginia.
And we should mention very quickly, UMass men have a great team this year. The Marist women are in.
One word. Yep.
Iona. We've got a lot of regional interest here. Syracuse is going to be playing.
Yeah, go U of A.
Yeah. So I think I'm a baseball fan, number one. I think this is the best sporting event in the year.
Really?
It is so much fun. Everyone has a shot, and that's all you can ask for.
And we'll help you fill your bracket out later, Alan.
Okay, because I want to get that $1 million.
$1 billion.
Oh, it's a billion. Who gives the billion?
I don't know.
Or is it nonsense?
Some billion.
It won't matter because no one's going to do it.
What happens if three people win?
I don't know.
Three
I don't
billionaires?
Think that's never happened before.
So what? I mean, it could happen.
Well, where do you send it? Who do you send it to?
I don't know.
The internet.
Yeah, right. Yeah, just somewhere in the internet. Yeah. It's NCAA.org, right? Or EDU. What is it?
Whatever.
It's probably com.
Okay. Sure.
I
hope Elaine Calieros is listening and is getting his basketball team ready right now. To
the nanotech
in, yeah, nanotech
team.
NCAA.com, you're right. I apologize. NCAA.com.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll find out Thursday, Florida. We'll have you back on Friday. We'll talk about that. We know you'll be as happy as you are right now.
Well, let's go Danes. Just go out there and see what happens. That's all you can ask for.
Be really fun.
Go Nanos.
I mean, they were, just real quick, they were trying to get to Sunday a couple weeks ago. And the fact that they are now going to play the number one team in the country is amazing.
That's amazing.
And really exciting. And if it's and at least if it's a good game, it'll be a lot of fun. All right. Ray, Ian, Alan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. We'll be back tomorrow. Coming up next, Ian will talk to the very funny Mike Birbiglia. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.